always on top.
Yeah, the game, that's it. I don't know what's going on. Welcome, everybody. I am excited. Eric Lindquist is excited. Awesomeo.com is excited for the British Open. It's only Monday, but that doesn't mean we don't have much to talk about. PGA DFS first look is on the docket here. I am Ben Reza. That is Eric Lindquist. That is not California. My friend, you're still alive in Florida, are you not?
Somewhat. I think last night was one of the better nights one can have in South Beach here in Miami. I love this place now. That is definitely it. But I probably haven't been to a club in forever. Found my way there. And you know what? I also found my way back, which is very, very important. So I was able to study, put in the work, because this is by far my favorite PGA DFS week of the year.
It's an absolutely fantastic week. It's my favorite week of golf. The DFS side of this tournament is wild. I'm not going to pretend that it's not. It's, and we're going to get into all the differences of a normal week, and then we're going to talk about everything that you need to know to get ready for this one. But I did want to say you are a trooper for powering through. I did not think you were going to do the show, and you are here. You've got a microphone. You're prepared. Apparently, there's a lightning storm. You got all sorts of things going on.
Yeah, I'm adulting hard here. It's like 1 p.m. and it looks like it's 9 p.m. here in Miami because we have lightning and showers, and it's just going nuts outside here. So I tried to set up the lighting as best I could, but brought the setup. We're ready to rock.
Our loyal listeners, they're already here. Our good friends, they will be fine with your lighting. Don't worry about it. Chad, it's good to see everybody. I know normally I'm doing this on a Tuesday, but excited to get a day early and work through this with you guys. We're going to have some fun today. I do want to say before we dive in to the John Deere and certainly to the Open, our friends at Monkey Knife Fight sponsoring the show even on a Monday, and we appreciate that. If you haven't been over there, player prop based contest, easy to play, not a huge time commitment, and it's a little different than the other DFS sites, so you can stop over NBA, UFC, PGA, of course, esports, soccer, they've got it. Go over monkeyknifefight.com, choose which game you want to play, contest type, buy-in level, and of course when you sign up, promo code AWESOMEO. Instant first match deposit bonus of up to $100. Go and sign up today. All right. Before we get into it, I do want to ask you, and you certainly had some other things going on. Did you watch Lucas Glover's triumphant return to the winner's circle?
I did not, but I can tell you one thing. I was refreshing my phone because I was very live in the $15 leading down to the end of the stretch. Obviously, Stricker was not, it didn't pan out the way that it probably should have after that ridiculous third round. He kind of put it back together, put himself in the mix, fell apart. But I had all the pieces except for one, Brandon Hagee, who could not put it together on Sunday. He shot two over. That ended up kind of being the nail in the coffin. But it was fun because, you know, I'm on the boat for the FanDuel live final. And, you know, I'm just refreshing DraftKings over and over, trying to see what's going to go down with it. But it was top 10 for a while. And then the back nine, in normal golf DFS fashion, it just fell apart.
Yeah, that happens. I mean, it's such a weird week leading into this because it's such a different course. And we talked all about that. Stricker did get through for you. Wise rallied only to do nothing for me. That thanks for making the cut to not even make it. The one thing I wanted to ask you before we dive in, do you take anything away from like what you saw from Berger or some of the guys that did play and now are heading over?
Okay, maybe I might be selective. Maybe that's also cherry picking your kind of takes on certain players. I think that I have to be careful about parts of that. We've seen a number of times where guys have good form at the John Deere and then they fly over to Europe and they play decently well in some spots. I mean, it's been, I believe it was Bryson who ended up playing really well back to back, but you're talking about the elite players in that kind of regard. Him and Spieth have been able to do the 1-2 back and forth pretty successfully, but you're talking about top tier players. I think for the most part, it's kind of a wash. This is going to be a completely different beast.
I'm with you more than not. I think that what ends up happening is people attach, you know, you Monday morning quarterback it. Like if Berger plays horrible at the Open, people will say he shouldn't have played last week. He should have went over early. Mm-hmm. If Berger wins, obviously people will say, man, you can play JDC no problem as a tune-up. Look at what Berger did. I don't know if any of that really matters. I don't take a ton. Most of the players were playing in Scotland. Even there, I think it's good to get some reps on links courses. And certainly throughout the week, we're going to talk about that. I don't think any of this stuff matters. This is a different test. And that's what I want to talk about mostly today. I know we're going to get into some of the players and some of the betting preview. But I think on a Monday with so much that can change, the way to attack this is really broad strokes and dive into to some of the big themes.
Love it. I think that that's the right way to do it. We aren't going to be talking a bunch of ownership. We can talk about who we kind of have leans on for the ownership, because that is the game that we play. But it's kind of taking in the elements, looking at what this golf course presents, looking at some of the previous tournaments. We have a decent enough, you know, 5-6 tournament sample size of like more modern golf that exists for this, going back to like Greg Norman up to here. But yeah, there is some randomness that we are going to be embracing this week, and I'm looking forward to it.
That's an understatement, and well said. Let's get to it. Final major of the year. It's crazy. This is the last one, but golf never ends. We got the Olympics, FedEx Cup, all sorts of things, but we haven't had an Open. Shane Lowry is still the champ. It's been a while because we didn't have one last year, and I don't know what you really take from that, but I did want to say that, and really, this one to me, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on this. To me, the British Open is just different. It's got a unique feel from the other majors. Do you feel that as well?
Yes. It seems like the crowds are extremely respectful. So there's that, as opposed to, I don't know, every other crowd in American golf at this point in time. But
mashed potatoes.
Yeah, it's smashed, but I can't even deal, but it's going to be fantastic from the environment to the golf courses. I mean, the golf courses in Scotland, I guess you had the Northern Ireland last time around 2 years ago, but these golf courses are just unique. And if you've never seen European golf, if you've never seen kind of this style, so it's just known as links style golf, you're hitting a lot of shots on the ground, you're playing a lot of shots. It's not the go-to hit it as high and far as you possibly can. You're kind of maneuvering your way around, you're being tactical. There's, you know, fabled stories of Tiger Woods winning without hitting a driver the entire week at an Open Championship. That's kind of the stuff that you're hitting: stingers, wind shots. You've got this long hay if you're somebody who just blasts it offline. I mean, it is just different, and it's so fun to watch.
Yeah, it seems, and one of the themes that I'm going to bring to this show is a little more art than science. You're going to get some weird things happening, and as we get into in a second into Royal St. George specifically, all I read is, you know, you're gonna dry it in the fairway sometimes, and your ball is gonna end up in possibly like fescue because there's weird bounces, and that's just links golf. There's a lot to it like that. There's gonna be danger zones. It's not bomb and gouge per se, and that's why we see time and time again with these Opens get some crazy guys that win. And that's what I wanted to ask you before we move to the course. When you look at something like this, you've obviously got recent form. Do you look at Open form, even though it's a rotational?
Do I look at Open form and say that again?
I'm like the history of how guys have kind of just played specifically at Open championships. Do you look at, you know, even though it's St. Andrews and Carnoustie, all right, different courses, is that something that you consider, or do you look more to like just standard recent form and say, we don't have any course history?
More standard recent form. I would say that we can kind of group a lot of these golf courses together, because they play similarly, whether it's a Carnoustie, whether it's Royal Lytham St. Anne's, whether it's St. Andrews, we can kind of group a lot of them because they're going to play pretty similarly stylistically, but there are so many nuances. Like St. Andrews, I think 4 par 5s, you're looking at this is a par 70. It's going to play long in a lot of spots. And I don't know, I think this is more of a bomber type golf course for an Open than what others might be, which sounds counterintuitive because there are only the 2 par 5s, but that's, for me, it's going to be a lot more recent form. If there's somebody who's glaringly not played well in Open championships, I mean, Phil Mickelson notoriously was never a solid player over here and then goes out and wins a damn thing. So it's hard to really peg what I would want out of the history from Open championships, because it does change so much. And again, you can have some really strange high variance occurrences if somebody gets a bad weather draw 1 year, like Rory McIlroy in Northern Ireland got the absolute short end of the stick. Shane Lowry gets the perfect draw and just takes it to the bank. And Rory, you know, put together a phenomenal back nine in horrendous conditions and still missed the cut. So it's like, it's just so high variance where you're going to get from year in, year out. So I try not to go crazy with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like one of these things. Do I want my guys to have Open experience? Definitely. Do I want my guys to have played in Europe at some point just to get some reps on links courses? Definitely. am I going to overreact if the guy hasn't won an Open? Obviously not. I don't really care about that. I think it's more important if you're, there are some players in this field that have basically no experience in links golf. I think that could be a detriment.
Oh, definitely. Okay. So that might be the correct way of looking at it, as opposed to, you know, looking at previous history. If you have no history, yeah, this is going to be a different beast, but we've seen Xander play well in spots. He should have an Open championship. And I don't know if he basically had any previous history going into that tournament where Tiger almost took it down. Francesco Molinari won it. I'd be curious. I could take a look, but I don't know if he had any Open championship experience beyond maybe 1 year at that point. So there are some players, but the elite players are going to be elite on just about any kind of track. I feel pretty confident in saying that. We're looking at these mid-range guys, and that might be where I really give them a peg down in the event that they haven't been over here before.
Agreed. That's kind of where I'm at. The best players in the world, they can go and play and adapt. But if you're looking for a punt, I would probably take a look at maybe what they've done. It doesn't have to be at an Open too, even if they had some reps, and we're going to talk about some of those guys. But let's get into Royal St. George's. It looks like one of the tougher rotations. You know, this is, of course, is no joke. This is going back, but I do want to read it off a little. We've seen, you know, several editions. In 2011, the winner was -5, 2003, -1. Greg Norman toured up in 93 at -13. Then it was over par in the 80s. Like, it's so weather dependent, like all of these courses, but I do say at first glance, it's pretty tough. Par 70, around 7,200 yards, but it's going to play pretty long. Is there anything right off the bat when you look at the course that stood out to you, or is it just another links course?
I think the thing that stands out to me, and I'm hoping that this can be kind of the narrative for me going forward this week and for Live Before Lock on Wednesday, I think that this is really going to be a place where I am focused on bombers. Like I don't feel that way about most Open golf courses, but 7,200 yards doesn't sound long. And everybody is going to hear that and be like, oh, that's not a long golf course. It's par 70. So you're taking away the two par fives that would be scoring opportunities that you have for these players. And I just think that the guys who are able to hit longer irons comparably, again, I don't know. I haven't even looked at the weather because I know that that's going to be a big part of my process. I don't know what it necessarily is going to be yet. And I will be stacking it kind of multiple ways, but I do think that if it's going to be short hitters out there, I mean, we don't have to worry about Zach Johnson. Or, I mean, we had, 13 withdrawals here coming up from COVID or other things leading into this golf tournament. But I do think that being able to bomb it on this golf course and be able to just avoid some of the catastrophes that exist with these bunkers, I mean, that's going to be the name of the game, I think, this week. And just because we say it all the time on these shows, hitting it far is never a bad thing on any golf course in the world, but specifically at this one where, in order to have shorter clubs into your hands, in order to have scoring opportunities on these longer par fours, you're going to need to be able to hit it out there a little bit.
It's definitely going to test you. I mean, there's no doubt. It does seem shorter in theory, but this is going to play long. I will say there's only two par fives, and one of them, the one on the back, is not a scoring hole. It's very difficult. There's massive trouble if you go for it. I know DJ, of course, blew up there.
Oh, yeah.
In the last edition, but it's just a tough, tough challenge. Some of these par threes are approaching 250 yards. It's gonna definitely challenge players in spots. Again, one of the many reasons why I'm excited to do this Monday show is that we can't, you know, talking about the players is great, and we're going to talk about some players, but the draw is so important. The weather is so important. There's so many factors that can change these things. And just to give people some background, normally what we see over here is, you know, you tee off on both sides. The Open has everybody teeing off at one, and it causes tee times for like 8 straight hours. There's no waves per se. It's just tee times going off every, I don't know what, 10 or 15 minutes all day.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All day. It's 10, 15 minutes. And they tee off at like 4:30 in the final round. It's like, it's outrageous wild. Cause it stays light out there until 10:30 or something stupid. But, they end up, being pushed to the afternoon. And again, it creates this high variance outcomes. And I will suggest that whether or not people say it's going to be a draw for one side or the other, I would recommend always having some hedge stacks on the other side of it. Like, that for me has been the most profitable thing about playing the Open Championship in previous years. This is my highest ROI tournament. And it comes down to, I'm willing to embrace both sides of the coin, because if everybody thinks it's going to be one weather draw, I can't tell you how many times it's ended up being the other side of it, just because of 1 or 2 hours of absolute torrential downpour, or when it's blowing 40 and there's just no way for the ball to stay on the green. It happens all the time over here.
No doubt. And as Chad is just kind of bringing this up, in some regard, that it can curb your ownership. Obviously, they may be talking about other things, but when one side of the draw looks like they have a massive advantage, the other side of the draw, those guys are all lower owned, kind of in a blanket statement. And that can be very, very lucrative if the wind flips. And I think we all know these courses that are right on the ocean, it flip in the middle of the tournament. It could flip an hour in, and then you're way ahead of the game. The last thing I'm going to say on the stacking, it's not just tee time stacks. I micro stack here. So like, I will take like a 2 hour window and just be like, I want all my golfers as close as possible to this little window, because it's not the traditional tee times that we're used to seeing.
Right. It's more spread out than ever before. And so I like that strategy. I think being very specific about the weather, being able to take a stand like that, that's definitely going to be a strong thing to be looking at going to this week.
Last question before we move into the top of the board a little bit. Is there any course on the PGA Tour that you even think is worth kind of looking as a comp, or are you saying this is so different, this is a different animal altogether, I'm not going to mess around with that?
I was looking at some US Opens, I think over in Wisconsin. I think that either like a Whistling Straits or something like that seems like a little bit of a comp where you have to be hitting long irons. But even that, I mean, it's exposed, but there's definitely some target golf to that as well. It's a difficult comp, maybe a couple of US Opens that we can kind of pick and choose some spots to do it, but it's so hard and it's so tricky. And, you know, again, we're going to be stacking based off tee times already and kind of having little regard for certain things like that. I can't really pick and choose spots for it as much, but do you have anything in mind?
Not really. So I think the biggest problem is that I'm with you. Some of the US Opens, but we don't see them every year. So you're like, your sample size, like Chambers Bay, I think is interesting.
Yeah, that's a good comp.
What can you really take from that though? It's one tournament in one specific year. Kiawah Island, I see a little, but that it was so much longer. It had links elements, but I don't see a correlation. Obviously the one links course that they tried was Trinity Forest. You could throw that in the dumpster, that course. Don't even get me started on Trinity Forest. That's nothing like this in any way. I think Aaron Wise won that tournament, just to give you some perspective of how different that thing was with the clown's nose hole in one.
Oh my God.
Anyway,
oh my God.
This is just different. I think you're much better off looking at what a guy's do at the Scottish Open, the links, you know, the Alfred Dunhill, things like that. And do you have any experience over there? And that's where I want to go to our first clicks. Before I do, Chad, I do want to say we've got a lot going on here at Awesomeo. You know, we're going to be doing these shows. We're going to provide a ton, but behind the paywall, the projections, the tools, the ownership. I know Eric is working hard on the pro plays as well. He's in there. I'm in there. Alex, the whole team, certainly Jason and whatnot, give you some insight into how to build kind of player pools for this wild tournament. We've got so much more. So if you want to just get in, even if it's just for the week, awesomeo.com/join. Hit in that golf under $10 a week. No reason not to do that. It's a great time. Certainly the All-Star game is going on, and we've got some fun betting content out there. Me and Josh doing the breakfast menu every morning, having some fun, giving our best bets. So just a lot going on here. We want to keep you guys informed and certainly happy with the content. So we appreciate that. But the big question for me, dude, is Rahm separated a little bit lately, and is he the clear favorite, or is he just, you know, the slight favorite amongst a bunch of other players?
I mean, his pricing would reflect that. I think 11-3. I mean, he's playing in another stratosphere here, and you know, what can he possibly say? I mean, I would say it was kind of surprising to see him trail out a little bit towards the end there. It was kind of a wild weekend there in Scotland. So I'm thinking his form is just as good as you could possibly be looking at. I do think that because we talk about the high variance of this golf tournament, I don't know what his draw is going to be. I also know that you can hit one bad shot and it can have massive repercussions in a way that, I mean, in major championships, that definitely can happen. But I would say there's a way that you can get away with it at a US Open, hack it out, make a par, you know, from wedging it close. sometimes in an open championship, you hit it in one of these bunkers and you are looking at seven, you're looking at eight, you're looking at something that's just unavoidable, and it can be a disaster really quick if somebody tries to play with fire there. So maybe less form. I think, you know, I'm maybe skewed a little bit growing up in the Tiger Woods generation, because you see somebody go out and just dominate every style of golf course. But Jon Rahm is not Tiger Woods. I think that there are a number of guys that we can look at as pivots. But if you can make Jon Rahm work and he is somebody that you're high on, there's not a single thing we could poke in his golf game right now.
No, it's more the peripherals of things that remain to be seen. I like Rahm, but bad draw. I like Rahm, but he's going to be extremely popular. I like Rahm, but I like other guys in the range. If you're just looking at it, you know, on the surface, what more could he do? He's playing fantastic. He went over to Scotland. He played fantastic again. He just missed a lot of putts there. He had opportunities. I get it. I like it. And I think as we run, you know, ownership will be up either later today or early tomorrow. And we'll refine that as we get more and more information, of course. But I think Rahm is a very, very, very solid starting point, and that's obvious when you're the most expensive guy on the slate. I think it's more a question of what are you sacrificing if you play Rahm, and then where do you go? Because right below him, we've got Rory, we've got Brooks, we've got DJ, and we've got Xander. You can play Rahm in one of them, certainly, but it's going to really start to turn the screws, and you're going to need some cheapies if you do that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Rory aspect here. So we haven't seen him since the US Open. It's been what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. It's kind of a dead season here. So he went back on over and we saw him play last week. He's fine. Like I don't read too much into it here, just because we know that he can turn it on. He's going to play well, I think, this week. And I think out of everybody, just because we've started to see him progress, his form has gotten progressively better, that he's going to be somebody that at 10-9, I think I'd probably prioritize, depending on what the ownership's going to be or what his draw is going to be. But I think out of the grouping, I mean, I've never been a Koepka guy. I will probably won't be going to Koepka. Looking at some of his previous finishes, 4th, 39th, 6th, DNP, and 10th in his last five European, or in the last five Open championships. Also, can we just, we have to figure out, are we saying British Open or are we saying Open Championship going forward this entire week?
I'm bouncing around. British Open certainly is what society says. Okay. They call it the Open Championship. It's depending on how I'm feeling. If I'm feeling a little frisky, I'll go British Open and get everyone riled up.
Love it. Love it. Well, I'll see what pisses more people off. I'll go with that one. But yeah, the Open Championship, I think, sounds nifty. But it's always been the British in my brain, so I don't know. But either way, Rory McIlroy, my favorite out of that grouping. Koepka and DJ, fine, but I just don't ever really get to much Brooks Koepka as is. So that's probably, I'm the wrong person to ask there.
So am I. And a lot of, I mean, and Brooks has certainly plenty of links pedigree. He seems to really likes these courses. He's got experience in Europe. Rory, though, also has a sneaky, if we want to do look at some open history, he's very good in opens. He was not good at in his home course. Maybe there's too much pressure. Who knows at Portrush. But before that, 2nd, 4th, and 5th in the previous 3 years, I think his game is suited. He plays in Europe, you know, several times a year, basically. Sometimes he goes over for the Mideast swing. Certainly has been over there for some of the big tournaments at times. And of course he's here. I mean, he knows, he grew up on those type of courses. I'm not worried about that. When you look at, and again, we're going to have actual ownership, but just gut feel, to me, DJ would be the lowest owned of the five. What do you think about that? Or do you think someone else could be the lowest?
I think pricing might force it to be Koepka as the lowest owned. I think everybody's going to want to get to Rahm. Rory McIlroy, people will look at that 2nd, 4th, 5th in the three previous years. And again, for me, I'm throwing out Northern Ireland. He got like the worst draw possible, and he was playing on his home course with like the pressure of the world. Shane Lowry kind of just played outrageously well too. But either way, Rory McIlroy probably going to, I think, be the second highest owned of the grouping. I something tells me Brooks might just be a little bit lower, but wow. I guess there is that group of DFSers that just click Brooks Koepka and majors and go with that narrative. So there's going to be that.
Yeah. I think that combination of the narrative and it, listen, credit to Brooks as usual. I mean, look at his recent, you know, he's 2nd at the PGA and 4th at the Open in recent weeks. So I do think that will factor in. DJ's just not playing great golf. We had a sub earlier today in our premium Slack, which is one of the many reasons why I love being in there, that mentioned that DJ is upwards of 25-1 in the market. I like that much better. If I find that number out there, I have no problem putting a position on Dustin to win the tournament. I don't like him nearly as much on the DFS side, though. I think I'd rather stick with Rom playing great. Rory is fine. Xander, I'm kind of indifferent to, but if I landed there, I wouldn't be upset.
I like that 25-1. I mean, that's 25. A Dustin Johnson number. 25 is a big number for him. You're not going to see that many times probably going forward. I got to assume the form's going to be flipping here sooner rather than later. There's too much talent. He's won every single year for like the last 10, 11 years on tour. I mean, it's going to show up. So 25-1, that is a great call to start off the week.
The next tier that I do want to talk about before we dive into some of these guys with betting, and feel free to kind of intertwine it if you want. I think most people, when you think of, even at the top of the show, I said it's more art than science. You're going to get some funky bounces. You got to be creative. And that's Jordan Spieth. I think we all know that that's how he plays. And the form has come around. He's sub 10K. It's about 18-20-1 in the betting market. I think he's going to be extremely popular. But what do you do with Spieth, who seems built for these type of conditions?
I don't want to. I was trolling a little bit earlier when Jason was on Twitter. I just basically went on. He was like, how much Jordan Spieth is too much Jordan Spieth? I said 1% because that sounds about the right number for me. I'm going to have a little bit of him at least this week. I doubt I ever get to the field on Jordan Spieth in a golf tournament in my life. But as you said, I think the price is just too good at 9,700. He plays so well over here. And he's the definition of like artistry over science. Like he finds a way to get the ball in a hole in miraculous ways that other people don't. He hits it 80 yards offline, hits that hybrid to whatever at the Open Championship, ends up raining on Matt Kuchar's parade. I think that he's just a guy who can go out and win these kind of golf tournaments. It'd be kind of foolish, I think, for this type of golf course not to have exposure there.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at Spieth right now, I mean, there's no question about it. He has gained tee to green in every event in 2021. He has gained off the tee and with the approach in every event since April. I mean, he's basically gaining strokes in every category every week. So there's not much to poke through. It's more of, you know, are you going to be playing a 30% owned Jordan Spieth? Do you think that the ball striking can hold up if it's very windy or something? Certainly the short game, the putter, I don't, you know, these greens are a little different than what we see here because they have to keep them slow, because when it's that windy, the ball would be rolling all, you know, off the green. So maybe that neutralizes some of his abilities. I have no real basis for that, but there's no doubt that the game is in great shape heading in. I will say Justin Thomas is right there though. And I don't want to forget about Justin Thomas, who, if it's calm conditions and this turns into a wedge fest, Justin Thomas is unstoppable at times when he is dialed in with those irons.
Yep. I'm going to be playing an outrageous amount of Justin Thomas this week, getting him at 9,600. I expect him to be pretty popular too. And if he's not, I mean, sign me up for just a ridiculous amount, because he is tried and true. I still believe that he is a top 2-3 player in the world compared to what we've seen of his form of late. He still has a W on the season at Sawgrass. I have no problem just jamming as much Justin Thomas as possible in this spot. I mean, this whole 9K range, I mean, between DeChambeau, Spieth, Thomas, Louis, I mean, that whole grouping, and then Morikawa and Hovland right underneath. I mean, this is going to be where I think a lot of lineups are starting to begin, and that's going to be the opportunity cost. And I think it's going to have a big effect on what Rahm and McIlroy's ownership are going to be. I think we might, as we're talking through this a little bit, get them a little bit lower on than we're thinking right now.
I'm with you. It's going to be interesting to see how ownership shakes out, because not everyone can be popular. We know that. And friend of the show, Brian, just said, I keep hearing driving accuracy is the most important. I think it's more that you're going to hear a lot about, you got to keep it out of this nasty stuff. You can't advance the ball in the fescue.
Nope.
There's going to be opportunities to be aggressive. I think that most guys will choose, depending on the weather, of course, to club down. You don't need to be aggressive if you don't want to. So I don't think you need to be accurate per se. It's just more that more guys will take that route than a normal course.
And having guys like Brooks, and you know, I'm not a Brooks guy, but I mean, having being a bomber doesn't mean just hitting driver and banging it out there. It means that you can hit 4-iron and 2-iron off of some of these tees, put yourself in a better position because you're still progressing it a lot further than these short knockers who are going to have to hit a lot of 3-woods and drivers on some uncomfortable driving holes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I look at this and JT, it's really just been a putting issue at times. I feel pretty comfortable with him. Certainly if you're getting a discount in ownership, I would take him over Spieth. Not to say you can't play both, not to say I won't play both at times, but JT is a guy I've kind of honed in on. But one other guy here I have to talk about. To me, this is the most fascinating situation in the entire tournament. Bryson has played in three Opens, 2017 cut, 2018 51st, 2019 cut. He is literally known as the scientist. Do you think that it's just a work in progress and he just needs to figure it out in terms of this? Or do you think his style and how he's so technical is just not built for a tournament where things change so rapidly on the fly?
Did you watch him have a mental breakdown at the Open Championship 2 years ago? Do you remember when he was on the range?
I do remember that.
And he just went ballistic and he talked about how he just hates these golf courses. I don't know. I think he's going to figure it out. And I got to trust that he's going to find a way to get it done. But yeah, he was having just an absolute hissy fit on the range with his coach, going nuts. I'm going to have to Google and double check which year that I think it was 2 years ago. It would have had to have been 2 years ago. There wasn't an Open Championship last year. So definitely
not last year.
Yeah, I was going to say a hot take. There we go. We're here for the deep information. Here you go. No golf tournament, but Bryson DeChambeau. Yeah, this has not been the spot for him per se, but I don't know. If you're going to just say he's going to be unowned, I'm going to definitely play him because he fits the category of somebody that I think could play very well on this type of a golf course. And I would say out of any of the other players up here, at the height of his powers, and this is what I talked about why I picked him to miss the cut at the Rocket Mortgage, was basically he plays high variance golf. And at the height of his powers on this golf course, he putted the lights out of it before. If the putter is just so, so important for that guy, because he can be one of the best in the world at rolling the rock at times. And if he gets it hot, I mean, you could just murder any field, but he also can be on the flip side of that and throw a hissy fit and miss a cut. So enjoy that for everybody. We've definitely seen the missed cut now 3 years in a row. So now I'm hoping it can maybe be on the other side of it.
It's definitely a boom bust option, but that's as we talk about often. I mean, Bryson throws up, and this is what you see a lot in these links courses. It's not death by bogeys, in my opinion. It's more you're rolling along and you make a nine, because if you get into trouble, there's no alternative besides hitting it out sideways. Some of these bunkers you have to play at, like there's no, oh, you're working in and out of trouble. And I feel like sometimes Bryson in particular, Memorial comes to mind where he made the 10. He can't get out of trouble sometimes. I do think that 35-1 is kind of interesting in the betting market. You don't see that number on Bryson too often. There's missed cut equity. I think he's much more likely to miss the cut than Spieth and JT and Usti. I think that he's also has an element though where if he does figure it out and the conditions can or say calm, Bryson can destroy any course.
Yeah, he really can. I just found this clip too, and I'm very, very excited. I'm going to post it in chat. 2018 Open Championship. Bryson DeChambeau loses his mind is the name of the YouTube video. I'm very, very excited to watch such things after the show.
Anyone else? Like, what do you do with Hovland, Morikawa? These guys, they don't have nearly the, you know, they're young guys. They don't have the experience in these type of events. Have they played some golf over there? Yeah, sure. Is that a knock on them, or do you think that it's weather dependent? How do you break down the young guns with the talent?
So I do think Hovland, if we're going to talk about like maybe who has more experience, one, Hovland obviously is Norwegian. He's been in America for a while here. But Carson Creek playing in Oklahoma State at that golf course, a little bit more Lynx-esque from what I remember seeing at the NCAA championships, 2 years ago when Matt Wolf just ran away with it. But Carson Creek, I mean, it's definitely more Lynx-y and sets up that way. So having played that throughout his entire college career, there's definitely a lot of wind that's popping up there in Oklahoma. I don't mind looking at that as a little bit of a comp for him to possibly be going out and playing well here. But Victor Hovland's one of the best ball strikers on the planet. That's not going to surprise anybody. Morikawa is a tough guy for me to get a gauge on just because it seems like he's been very, if you talk boom bust, I mean, his putting has been just so strange to me. And obviously we've seen some amazing form, the Memorial, 5.4 strokes gained putting there. He lost strokes putting at the US Open and finished fourth. Like that's kind of outrageous. So another just absolute striper of the golf ball. We got to see that putter flip. And as soon as he switched to the claw, I was off of him. He ends up winning in Florida right off the bat. But since then, it's been some very, very hit and miss stuff from him.
I think he's some of the guys I plan to attack a lot of my lineups like this, where I'm gonna make buckets based on how difficult the wind could be. And not to say tee times, more that like if Morikawa is in a competition with who can hit the best irons and you're attacking the flags, he's gonna be just fine. If this is like, all right, this is out of control, you're scrambling all over, you're making eight putts, 8 footers for par, who can do that the best? Not Morikawa. Patrick Reed, Cantlay, Hatton, who is one of the best links players in the world. All of those type of players, I think, are better suited for that. But if you give me, and then if you want to say bomber heavy, Bryson, Hovland, guys that can lean off the tee, can they gain 5 strokes off the tee and separate? That's another scenario that you can do. Maybe Tony Finau comes in there, Scheffler. These are the type of names that I think they fit certain builds, but you got to make sure the puzzle pieces, more than any other week, in my opinion, make logical sense this week.
Yeah, I love that call. And you're kind of the person who's put me on to doing more of that. That's definitely been a leak in my game. Has been obviously there's certain golf courses where that is going to lean you from course history or whatever else it might be to playing players that have the same type of abilities. But yeah, if the golf course is going to be playing super, super windy, if it's going to be crazy out there, yeah, I'm going to want guys who are capable of being able to show that they've had some experience here a little bit more than I was maybe alluding to earlier. I think that that's definitely a good call. And then, yeah, just having the course fit for the types, you know, horses for courses. And, you know, if this ends up being a spot where the putter can get hotter, people around the green are going to be a little bit more proficient. Yeah. I love grouping together in that regard too, but I'm above all else always going to be looking at the weather draw in this golf tournament.
You have to, yeah. I don't want to stress people. Don't, like, if you're in love with the play and he gets a bad draw, you could still play well. I don't think it's the end all be all, but you want to be aware. There's no doubt about it. And leading up, that's why we have shows today, tomorrow, Wednesday night, leading you guys basically into the tournament, because this locks so early in the morning. Make sure you get those lineups in. I will be in Saratoga getting ready for the start of horse season. Eric, I'm going to put you on some ponies. I know you like to bet those ponies.
Damn it. No, I don't. I do, no, you but do. I don't. I do. It's basically just me raging in sports betting channel. That sounds
like a good time.
There's that.
Looking at the betting market, there are some names, and I think this tournament, like a lot of tournaments, you can get exposure to some players maybe that you don't want in DFS through the betting market. You know, I mentioned DJ. I probably underweight on him, but I think he's going to be in on the betting card per se, because I think he's got good win equity but bad miscut equity for his price. Are there a couple names at the top that you maybe, you know, on a first initial look, you have some interest in the betting markets, whether it is a Bryson type, a JT who's around 20-1, or are you saying, you know what, let me see the draw first. I don't want to lock anything in just yet.
Yes and no. I mean, 25-1 DJ is kind of too good to pass up. Yeah. I think having anything with a 2 in front of Justin Thomas is always going to be a good bet, but I do kind of want to wait and see a little bit of what is going to happen with some of the weather draws. I think what this is going to be, and I think that this is what I've been doing most sports betting. I do so many head-to-heads and three-mans during the course of the Open Championship. There is a gigantic edge to it. And I will hopefully, I promise you, because we don't have that much MLB stuff going on this week on Wednesday, I will be in there firing off a bunch of three mans, because they have, of course, the prices are baked in a little bit, but if you can get on the right side of some draws, you are golden this week more than just about any other week the entire year. It is why it's my favorite week of the year. It's my favorite sports betting week of the year for that reason.
That's great. Like I said, there's edges to be had outside of the DFS side. Of course, we're going to focus on that, but we've got plenty of content there. Me and Josh Ingham will be doing our contenders video, certainly our premium expert picks article, where maybe you'll throw in a matchup or two. We'll see what you can put up there. I do love betting three balls. That's an exciting sweat. And sometimes, you know, in this tournament as well, there are some guys that, not to say you see weird names obviously win and whatnot, but there are some groups where there's a guy that's really struggling and it almost becomes a head-to-head in some of those situations. I do want to ask you, though, it's kind of a general question. I wanted to ask this at the top. Are you deterred isn't the right answer, but with the Open, we see so many, you know, Tom Watson almost won one when he was like 60 plus. Darren Clark, when he won, was ridiculous. Ben Curtis, not a lot of people had heard of him. What do you do about that? Do you just say, you know what, I'm not going to worry about that, and if a crazy winner happens, so be it? But this is unlike the, you know, when people are putting on the green jacket, even if it's a surprise winner, it's a world-class player. But the Open, it brings in a lot of other names. Is that just something that we endure, or is there a strategy to that?
If you can find the right price, it's a price-based, like you're betting prices. You're not betting players necessarily at certain times. You're betting the quality of the player compared to what the number you can find available is. And there are some spots where you can take some darts based on certain narratives. And, you know, the things that are different about the Open, if you're newer to PGA DFS or if just newer as a golf fan to looking at it, the greens are significantly slower on these type of golf courses because they have to be. It's so windy out there. And so the stimp is generally around 9 or 10. That's how far out the ball is going to roll. When they have that little stimp meter deal that they have, that's just the term for it. A general average PGA Tour golf course is going to be around 12 and a half, 13. So that's going to be a drastically different event, having these slower greens where people can just bang it at the hole for certain times. And I think that it can bring in a lot of players who might not be as high of quality that just kind of are able to roll the rock that week. They're just kind of being able to get it there. And I think it brings more players into play so long as the conditions aren't absolutely outrageous. Because I think the harder the conditions get, and this is just something I've always believed in, I think it's pretty true and backed up just by seeing the quality of players who win US Opens of late and PGA Championships of late. You're not seeing the Michaels, was it Sean Michael? I can't remember his name, but we had so many random PGA winners in the 90s that were kind of all over the board. And, you know, Bob May going head to head with Tiger probably should have won that one. Like, you see some high variance occurrences with that. I think at the Open Championship, the harder the conditions get, the more inclined I am to only bet the top tier. I'm probably not going to go crazy throwing darts on, you know, 600 to one, 300 to one dudes like a Ben Martin would have been.
I wish it was Ben Curtis. If Ben Martin won the Open, my life would be complete. I love Ben Martin.
All the money and you would not be on the show right now, or you would own the show.
That both of those things are dangerously accurate. I think, again, you're going to see some guys on, we see it every time. Hao Tung Lee comes to mind, Xander Lombard, hung in for a bit. You see names and you're just like, how the hell is this guy on the top of the board? I don't really worry about that. I think for betting, that's where you open it up to, if you have a line on a guy, throw a top 10 on him, a top 20. You're going to get a nice payout there. You have a much bigger room instead of nailing the winner, but it can happen. I think the biggest thing before we move to our top values, to me, the guys on the PGA Tour specifically are a little more ingrained to make birdies and go low. And the harder it is, the more that is a struggle. I think we see some veteran guys and Europeans in general more apt to handle a 3-under winner or something like that, because they play in that, and guys that are more veteran, bogey avoidance is something that they're better at. Whereas some of these guys that can go 25 under at the John Deere, they can't turn off that skill set, and it really doesn't suit when the goal is to hit away from the flag and deal with the wind and the bumps and the slopes. So keep that in mind kind of as we go to the values. But when you looked at the pricing, there was a couple names to me that jumped out immediately. Did you have that reaction to anyone? And I guess specifically Daniel Berger.
Oh my God. I didn't even.
I was stunned about that, but maybe that's more me than society. Like,
so let's talk about it. I mean, 7,400, obviously, this is a quality of player. I mean, he's sitting in the range surrounded. All you have to see is Christian Biesenhout, Francesco Molinari, Higo. They're all at the same price as Daniel Berger, who we've looked at as being a $9,500 player, you know, 10K player at times, with things like Pebble Beach. And we've seen those prices much, much higher. But yeah, 7,400 is a jarring number to be looking at. But going through his form, I mean, it's just been sporadic of times. I mean, the U.S. Open, he played fantastic. I believe he had seventh there. Yeah, he finished seventh at the U.S. Open. 10.1 strokes gained total there, 8.3 tee to green. Fantastic kind of look there. But then you get these performances like the John Deere, which was pretty much mailed in. The PGA, 75th there. The RBC Heritage, you know, he's played decent there, 13th. Like, he's been all over the map, so 7,400, I mean, he is going to be very, very popular at that number. I hadn't necessarily thought about him. Matt Fitzpatrick was the guy at 7,900 that just kind of looked a little bit wonky to me at first glance. I just think he's a higher quality player, but that's also just looking at the top tier of this field. Like, that's going to be something where you have to be looking at that. But coming off of a second at the Scottish Open, he is the prime example of somebody that has had experience of playing over here and just being an English dude. And I think having an under 8K Matt Fitzpatrick, you know, even going against my bomber narrative, I mean, I just think he gets it done on these tough tests.
I mean, he does. Matthew Fitzpatrick, we're waiting for him to break through over here, but this is a winner. This guy wins big tournaments in Europe. He's done it for a long time. He knows what he's doing. He came in second last week in Scotland. He makes a lot of sense. I think Berger, to me, is one of those guys, when I look at the betting markets, he's grouped with guys that are in the upper sevens and the low eights, like in terms of probabilities and where his odds sit. So I do think it stands out a little bit. He's going to be a staple of people's cash lineups. I think that's warranted. I have no problem with it. There's a million pivots in tournaments. Certainly Eric, me, Jason, the whole team, we're gonna get into all those guys on the coming shows on Tuesday and Wednesday. I got to ask you though, one other guy, and chat brought it up. I didn't even want to play this guy, but Sam Burns is 6,300. Yeah. I was really surprised that he was that low.
That was the one that I thought you were going to bring up right off the bat. But yeah, Sam Burns, this is a misprice for the quality of player that he is. He did not do me right when I was basically just saying jam him at the US Open. That was unfun. I did not enjoy that experience, and I'm looking to rectify it and get back my Sam Burns dollars. But the problem is 6,300. He's going to be outrageously popular. This might be a spot where you just click Berger, Burns, you make a cash lineup, and then you just kind of go away from it in tournaments. I don't really know how else to handle both of those just complete missed prices. We haven't had anything that was this jarring in a while, or just that was this far off base and far off line. But I mean, 6,300 Sam Burns, you won't recognize anybody in his range. I mean, there's just no name familiarity with anybody underneath 6,700 for the most part, for the average fan, for the average golf DFSer. So yeah, Sam Burns going to be an easy click for a lot of lineups, but I think that that's probably warranted at that number.
It's just weird because it's an interesting game theory question. Sam Burns is going to be very popular relative to his range. We know that. Sam Burns is very live. He's like a coin flip to make the cut. So part of me just wants to say, you know what, I'm not going to play him because I think I could pick up on the field. But if he makes the cut, such easy value, and the rest of your team is opened up. You have much more money to spend. He's paired with, not paired with, but he's the same price as Darren Clark. Is Clark a good value pick? I would say no. Don't play Darren Clark. That's a public service announcement, chat.
But he's a previous winner here.
Yeah, he hasn't been defeated in the last decade here, but I don't think that's the answer. Have it on good authority that that's not going to work out. Said the same about Phil, and he's got to make room for his trophy case, reasons unknown. Anything else in the lower ranges? Like I said, this is where, what do you do with the kind of contrast? So just to really quickly go through the Masters, you've got guys who have won green jackets 30 years ago playing at the bottom. They have virtually no chance. The PGA, you have 25 PGA pros, basically no chance. The US Open is open qualifying. You get some weird guys in there that really have no chance. The Open is filled with players from Europe and some Asian tour players that are a little better than what we see at the bottom of the other majors. So do you change your tone of like, all right, I can play guys maybe in the lower sixes as opposed to those other majors?
I probably would say yes as a surface answer. I mean, it's a long ways out from looking at it. And it's going to depend a lot on what the ownership is of Rahm, McIlroy, those two specifically, that if they're going to be underneath 15% for whatever reason, because people are jamming in the 9K range, I think it makes a lot of sense to be taking a lot more shots than normal. I would say that it's probably more indicative of what the pricing for the top end guys are than it is for me looking at a major and saying, yeah, obviously there's no value underneath 6,500, but I want to force in, you know, a combination of Rahm and McIlroy and making it work no matter what. And hopefully I can skim by and get a made cut out of it. But I mean, we're looking at some players like Rosner down there at 6,400, who's a pretty solid player. We're looking at a number of names. Troy Merritt is sitting at 6,300. There's some guys that stick out that you could get some value, and it would not shock me to see them play well. And we talk about the high variance of this. If they end up in the good tee time draw, I'm willing to play just about anybody with any kind of pedigree whatsoever. I mean, I really do open it up based on the weather draw in this tournament and kind of throw out little regard, because it can be a 6-shot swing. It can be a 7-shot swing in so many of these spots, if not more. I mean, we saw a drastic split in Northern Ireland last time. So I'm just kind of just giving you caution that if you think somebody's bad relative to other players, it makes a lot of sense to just kind of throw out the name and just play the tee time.
So normally when we get to this portion of the shows, I'm just like, well, I don't know who any of these players are. I have zero interest. This week in particular, I am more prone to play some of these guys. I'm not going to play all of them. It'll be sporadic, but there will be plenty of players in low sixes that make this cut. And there will be a couple that get some placement points. And these are guys that have experience in Europe. They play on the European Tour. They make cuts on the European Tour. And they have the advantage in many regards over the regular PGA Tour players, maybe not in talent, but certainly in knowing how to deal with adverse conditions and deal with winds that change on a fly. And that is extremely, extremely valuable. Good old Chan Kim is down there. There are some names. There's no doubt. We're going to sort through it. You just got to be careful. I think that's my final advice on that. You can't play. I wouldn't advise playing a ton of these guys because, of course, a lot of them are going to be casualties of the cut.
Yeah, it's going to be picking. You can be selective down here too. And I'm not just saying Sam Burns. I'm just saying don't play guys like, I don't know who Sam Bairstow is. There's going to be a lot of these dudes that I have to research to figure out who are you? What do you do here? What is it that you do here? I have no idea.
Down there. He is a mega bomber.
I clicked on Burmeister. I mean, that looked like some decent enough form here too. Just seeing the 35th, the tied six at the British Masters. He won at the Tenerife, which is as linksy as it can get out there on the lake. So I don't mind it. Good old Tenerife.
There's names. Like I said, you want to sift through, you want to, like, I'll tell you this much. If I click in Dean Burmeister to a lineup, there's a much higher chance that Bryson will be in that lineup. Why? Because they're both going to utilize the driver together. Maybe that's the skill set that unlocks Royal St. George. If I use Spieth up top, I'll probably look to some of these crafty putters down here, the Bezzes of the world, those type of players, and think it's going to be really windy, really tough. I want my guys to be crafty around the greens. Lucas Herbert, yeah, there's names. And I'm excited to get into these over the next couple of days. I know it's early. We can't – first of all, your hot takes, you've been in Miami, you've been doing crazy things. I know it's just a Monday hot take, so you don't need to get crazy. Is there anything for a first look that you feel maybe could separate you or is something that you're interested in?
You're not going to like it.
Probably
because
not.
It's probably going to be something that you're going to be wanting more of at this point in time. I think Ricky Fowler top fives.
Oh.
I think this is a Ricky Fowler type spot. You want to talk about a little artsy, a little bit of creative. I think this is where we can be looking. I've been waiting for a spot to get on board with Ricky Fowler with you. Pending ownership, pending weather draw. Everything's pending weather draw. I think that this is finally the time. We saw that 8th and the 11th at the Memorial. Game's been trending up. Putter's been flat for the most part, 4.4 and 3.9 in those 2 weeks that he played well. Had the 32nd at the Rocket Mortgage. Hasn't been as sharp of late, but I just think he's going to turn it on. We've seen him turn it on here a couple times now in majors of late. Sign me up for Ricky Fowler, top five.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to do with. I will say, you mentioned being creative. I give Ricky that. He has lost balls and taken penalties in ways I didn't know existed. So I give him credit for that. It's going to be tricky. This is why we do the shows together, because we have good synergy. We did not talk about this. My hot take was going to be related to Jason Day, who's doing a lot of the same things mm-hmm. as Ricky. Jason Day, initially when I looked at things, I was not super interested. I didn't think I could do it. His putter is heating up. And I do think if Jason Day is ever going to get back, it's going to be with the putter. And at a course like this, that maybe he can just lean, you know, club down off the tee. Don't do anything stupid. Pending the back is okay. Got 80 to ones out there for him. You've got some pretty decent numbers. Obviously, we're going to have to see where ownership falls. But like Ricky, I still think it's potentially in there. And a course like this, that maybe a different skill set can unlock Jason Day's putting for real this time.
God, we just like doomed ourselves on a Monday. Because now I mean, now that I've even like put it out into the world, it's like, well, I have to automatically play him regardless of anything else. But again, you have to be looking at the weather draw. It is so, so important. If it sounds dumb because you're going to hear it a million times this week, but it's more important than you think it is.
It is. And it's funny that I want to quantify that, at least how I take it. It's more important than you think it is, but at the same time, don't overreact to it. I know that sounds stupid and counterintuitive. It's not to say that the weather is everything. That's only thing that matters. Just try to understand that it can change things. And if it changes, what happens to your lineups? Try to play that string out, a domino theory of, okay, if this happens, then this could be the result. Mm-hmm. That's my best advice on the weather. But chat, as always, this is a good time. We got a lot of people in here. I am going to ask for some likes on the way out the door. I had a good time. I rarely hop on this Monday show, but I'm certainly glad I did. Shout out to Eric Lindquist for being a trooper and in the storms. Is it still storming there? We started
the
show. Yeah, it's
still storming. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Congratulations back, Pat, for me for doing my job.
Yeah. Hey, I respect it. on that note, chat, like I said, if you have any questions, handles are right there at Eric Lindquist, at Jazzres DFS. Give us a follow. You can hit us up and certainly get in Slack. There's so much going on there. So much content for the British Open this week. We're super excited, but I hope that you guys, there's a lot of money out there and we're going to grab some as a team here. And chat, I want to see those screenshots when it happens. But on that note, we're going to bounce on out of here. Enjoy the Home Run Derby tonight. I know it's a light day of sports, but we certainly are going to have you covered for All-Star Weekend and for everything Golf Championship, the Open Championship this week. Good luck. Talk to you guys tomorrow.
Joey Gallo over 500 and a half feet.
Oh, there it is.